Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right, Luciano, we're up and running. Good to have you on the podcast. This is going to be fun. You and I were talking off the air a little bit. You are you're in Buenos Aires. You're in Argentina.
Yes, I am in Argentina. I was in Miami until last Saturday, but well, vacations are over now, and well, back to the city, back to work, and my children back to school also next week.
And you're a for Americans don't realize unless they've done a little bit of traveling. So this is your summer going into your fall.
Yeah, and today specialty today is very, very hot and the humidity is very high. This is not the best day to be in Buenos Aires. Well, yes, inside my home with air conditioner, obviously. But today the weather is not good to be a tourist.
And you're a sports professor. So what is your exact title?
I'm professor I have a degree in journalism. I have not a master, something like, no, it's less than a master in coaching, and I am professor. I was university professor in journalism for 20 years, because you are American, and 2 or 3 years ago, the University of River Plate, the club, the football club or soccer club, asked me to teach about sport history, because I have more than 20 books in sport history, the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup, the Copa Libertadores, the Champions League, the Olympic Games. Now I'm working in a new book asked by my Spanish publisher about the European Cup, the Nation Cup, the European Cup. And I have 4 biographies. 2 of them are autobiographies, so I was ghostwriter of people like Carlos Bilardo. Carlos Bilardo was the Argentine manager in Mexico 1986, and Argentina was champion of the world. And Mario Kempes. Mario Kempes was the Argentine hero in our first star, won in Argentina 1978. Mario was the best player of the tournament and also the top scorer, and now he's living in America, in Florida. He was many years in Connecticut working in ESPN as commentator or sports expert on soccer, and now he's living in Florida. And then I wrote a biography on Diego Maradona with his personal trainer, and another one about a Colombian player, James Rodriguez. It was a real success in Colombia. That the book was incredible. Yeah.
Of course, Maradona was, you know, probably for many of us was the first, after Pelé, maybe the first.
Real
true superstar.
Yeah, I can see his picture. I can see his picture there behind you, the picture of Diego Maradona with the trophy, the World Cup trophy.
Yeah, and when we went to Buenos Aires, so we went recruiting. There is, what's the little district with that Maradona was from?
The name is in Spanish Villa Fiorito. Villa Fiorito, I can say in English. Villa is not far from the capital city. Is you have to cross by a bridge over the Riachuelo, a little river that works like border from the capital city to the province of Buenos Aires, and Diego Villa Fiorito is not far from there, maybe 2 miles, 1 mile and a half, something like that.
We walked down there and walked all around. Little statues of Maradona everywhere. Crazy.
Yeah. Well, Diego is like a god for soccer fans in Argentina. Maybe more, well, but for people like me, I am 56 years old, so was my first great hero in soccer. And obviously, I love Lionel Messi as well, because it's impossible to me to forget. I watched the final with my two kids, you know, side by side, the three watching the TV and the penalty shootout, and it was very, very emotional, incredible for us. It was a wonderful happiness. In Argentina, soccer is like is the most popular religion, and to spend 30 or 20 years without a cup, without winning a cup, is terrible for us.
The craziest thing, and I've told many Americans this, and I think I've mentioned it on a podcast before, when we visited Argentina, it's
the same in Brazil.
I've been to Spain, I've been to England, I've been to Mexico, I've been to Canada, I've been to a lot of other countries, and a lot of other countries where soccer, I've been to Colombia, where soccer is a big thing, but nothing compares to Argentina. When we turn on the news at night, and it would start with a football report, and then, you know, then they go on to the whatever happened, the president died, and then you get the sports report, which was more football, and then you get the weather, and then you'd end with more football. So at beginning, middle, and end was all about soccer, was all about the football. And I can't remember, then Buenos Aires is I can't remember the name of it, but there's a really large, really big park downtown. But, you know, we'd leave our hotel at 9:10 in the morning, and the park was kind of empty.
In Palermo?
There was not a stitch of grass somewhere in that park where you could walk and just lay down. There was football going on everywhere. People would lay down benches or bring over garbage cans or lay down their bags, and it was 1v1, 2v2, 11v11, 5v5, just whatever together. But it was completely packed, you know, from the middle of the day through dark. And between, you know, on game day, I remember going, we went to Boca, we go to the stadium on game day, and you couldn't park within 5 miles of the stadium. It was too crowded, and you'd start walking and the crowds of people joining in as you get closer and closer to the stadium, and the singing, and it was just regular match day. It wasn't a championship. It wasn't something special.
Yeah.
It's just the environment, no matter whether it was River Plate Stadium or Boca, or whether it was, we went to a couple small clubs in the second and third division just to see. It was crazy, no matter where we went. And I've never been to another country that had that same passion.
No, let me tell you, I've been in many countries, and football is a religion. As in Argentina, in Brazil, for example, if you go to Rio de Janeiro, you can see a lot of football matches in all beaches, from Copacabana to Ipanema to Leblon to Barra da Tijuca. A lot of people playing football. I did it myself when I was there, because all the time, you know, like, may I play, yeah, come on, with all Brazilians, local players in Ipanema. And the other country is Italy. And you know why the World Cup is so special for us in Brazil, Italy, and Argentina? Because we won the cup many times. Brazil 5 times, Italy 4, we 3. And it's like a revenge in in global history for us.
Right.
The most important football match for the Argentinians is Argentina 2, England 1 in Mexico 86, because for in the not for me a specialty, but for the people, for the country, was like, and Maradona said that, was like a revenge. Yes, we lost the war of Malvinas, but now we win over England on the pitch, on a football pitch.
And of course, yes, that was the famous hand of God goal.
Yeah, the first hand of God, and then the most exquisite goal in the World
That's
Cup history.
That's the part that always cracks me up when the English complain about the hand of God goal. And I said, yeah, but he beat your entire
No. I was in England last May, and I was in Derbyshire in a wonderful pub called Rabona. Rabona is when you hit the ball with the leg behind the other one. You know,
right.
Rabona is a word created here in Argentina in a local game. But Rabona is in all the world is Rabona. That kind of magic is Rabona. And I was there, Derbyshire, Matlock town, and all the walls with draws and pictures of Diego Maradona, Lionel Messi, Ricardo Infante. Ricardo Infante was the first player who scored the goal with the Rabona, and the hero let a journalist, a local journalist, invent that word for that kind of touch of the ball. I don't know, but they in England, they love Maradona. My book, my biography on Diego Maradona, I can't say it was a bestseller, but it was a real success. Really, they love Maradona. They love Argentine football. For us, the English, not for me, because I love to go to England and watch football in England. I really love it, and if I can, I will go next South American summer with my children. But for the Argentinians, England is maybe the worst enemy, but not just because of football or soccer. It's because football is also a political thing, also a social thing, an economic thing.
Right.
You know, now Trump has wonderful relations with FIFA, with the International Federation, and Trump wants to have a World Cup, the next one, not this one in 2026, in 2030, more teams, because Trump want to have China and India, they have a very poor level in football, but Trump wants to create something like a global economical sport situation, because he knows Budweiser is a FIFA sponsor, Visa is a FIFA sponsor, Coca-Cola is a FIFA sponsor, and this is the possibility to put American stuff in all the world thanks to the football. So this
really
football
is
not just a sport matter, you know.
I'm sure you've read the book How Soccer Explains the World.
Yeah, I have it there.
Yeah.
Yes, I have it.
Boy, anybody who hasn't read it, it explains exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of religion, from a standpoint of tribalism, from a standpoint of economics, of in every way that you can think of socioeconomically, how soccer, football, really encapsulates what is going on around the world.
And do you know why? Do you know why? Do you know why, Don?
Why?
Because the most simple games are football and basketball, because you just need a ball. That's it. You don't need nothing to play with, like a racket, like skis, like nothing. You just need the ball. The problem with basketball for people like me, I have 1 meter and 69 centimeters,
right,
is a game for tall people.
Right.
Basketball is a game for tall people. The rest of the population must play football anywhere. You don't need a pitch, a professional pitch with grass or something. You told me in Palermo Forest, I think what is the place you were talking about. In Palermo Forest, you put one jacket here, another jacket to make the goal. And you need just a ball, and you may play at the school with a ball made by paper or a tennis ball or It's a very simple game with simple rules, and this is the key in this situation. To play American football, you need a helmet, you need protections, you need a lot of things.
So much equipment.
Also for baseball, well, maybe You may use anything, you know, to play.
For baseball, in a specialized field, you can't just set up a field anywhere. Really, it's different. Yeah, no, you're right.
But you can play football. You can play football barefoot.
Right. No, it's the people's game. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's interesting. So you wrote a book about Messi.
Yeah.
And you know, Americans quite often complain that Messi would not have made it if he had been an American, if he had grown up in America. He wouldn't have been, nobody would have given him a chance because he was too small.
Messi is like me. We have the same we can't play basketball.
Right.
Well, but he's a magician. I don't. No, I am not a magician like him. Of course, this is for me. This is the greatest goodness about football is anyone can play. Anyone can play. And Messi also had problems during his childhood with the size, and he had to take a special treatment, you know, to grow up. And but I always see him like you know, like a Greek hero, not because of the tragedy. The tragedy was first, not then, not now. Because in Argentina, for many years, maybe 15 years, the football fans always say, but Lionel Messi wins everything with Barcelona, the Champions League, the Liga,
right,
the Spanish Cup, but nothing happened with the national team. And
right,
Leo suffered a lot with that situation. He also quit once after a final in America, the Centennial Copa America in America, and when Argentina lost against Chile by the penalty shootout, Leo said, okay, it's enough for me, it's enough for me. It's obviously the national team is not for me. I'm sorry, but I quit. In Argentina, said, oh, no, my God, what happened with that? No, it's not possible. Fortunately, he took distance of that situation, and he came back soon to the national team, and he went to the following World Cup in Russia, and something happened when the Argentinian Football Association president designated Lionel Scaloni as first manager or coach of the national team, because this guy without experience was the brain, you know, to put to make a team to obtain the best of Lionel Messi. Not just all Messi, goals of Messi. No, no. Messi was a part of a clock, you know, a Swiss clock. And Scaloni reduced the responsibility of Lionel Messi and let him play free, you know, not as a hero. One more of the team, one of the 11, and obviously with wonderful players, and we won all the Copas America from that time, well, two, and one World Cup, and the finalissima against Italy, so four championships in a row in 4 or 5 years, and now is. If I compare Lionel Messi like Achilles, I have to start. I have to start first with the tragedy, because the chronology is different. Because Achilles
right.
was the first contestant in the war, and but he died tragedy with an arrow, you know. Well, this is the opposite. Messi had an arrow on his foot for 15 years, but he could remove the arrow and be a real hero for all the Argentinians. And now is, you know, Lionel Messi is better than the president and all the minister all together. it's like Diego Maradona for the people, something like José de San Martín. José de San Martín was is the father of the nation. He obtained the independence and he has a statue in the Central Park, for example,
right next to Park, right
next
there,
to
yeah.
yes next to Simón Bolívar from Venezuela, and now Leo and Diego are our heroes. National hero, yes, because soccer gives us happiness, and that is not something, you know, small. It's very big for the people, for the soul. In a country with economic problems all the time, I have 56, and all the time we are in economic troubles. Oh no, we have to wait 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and nothing happened, nothing, and we are still with deep economical problem for the people, because money is not enough to live decently, but we have the football. And we have Lionel Messi giving us happiness.
Me up when I went to Buenos Aires, I thought there are two things that the people need not to revolt. Number one, they need to be able to eat. Mm-hmm. And then number two, they need their football. If they have those two things, if they have their distraction of their football and food, you know, at least when we went there, you know,
yeah.
the street vendor food, the empanadas, the... we went to down the street from River Plate is a great barbecue. I think it's Vaco de Loca. It's great.
Siga la vaca. Yeah,
that's it.
Siga la vaca.
It was inexpensive. You could eat. You could eat well, pretty inexpensively. Alcohol was inexpensive, so you could see where the government is choosing to subsidize. But if you wanted to get, you know, a television set or American jeans. Oh, the prices were crazy.
Yeah.
But those things aren't necessary to live. You got to have the food and you got to have the football. And if everybody's happy, then they won't revolt.
We are simple people, Don. We are simple people. But if you have football and happiness with the World Cup, for example, in Qatar, but when the game is over and you go to the fridge and the fridge is empty, football disappear immediately.
Right.
You need both things, as you said. Yes. Oh, well, the people need it every day, twice, three times, or four times a day. Yes, but we are simple people. With food and football, we are happy.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. And you know, things felt safe and calm in most neighborhoods. And I thought, well, at least the government has that part down, that the food has to be cheap. And so, yeah, you know, that restaurant that I was talking about, that was amazing.
Yes, yeah. we need also justice and
yes.
And the, we have problem with the criminality here, especially in the great Buenos Aires, outside the capital city, or in
outside
some
the capital city,
and
right.
in some neighborhoods of Buenos Aires also, in the south especially, in the south of the city, with security, food and football, we are in heaven.
Life is good.
Yeah. Well, like in everywhere, I was in Miami 2 Sundays ago when the Super Bowl was played by the Seahawks and the Patriots, you know, and yes, like in Argentina when Boca Juniors play against River Plate, nobody on the streets, all the people in front of the TV in Miami, of course, and. Also, I felt the same in New York 3 or 4 years ago. I was in February and also a Super Bowl Sunday, and nobody, I remember, the Fifth Avenue without people on the streets.
Yeah,
just a few tourists, but the rest of the population at home watching the game.
So talking about Messi. What does the general population feel about Messi playing in America? I mean, there's a lot of people I know that still talk about he's still had time, he still could have been playing at a higher level in Europe. What do they think about the MLS? What do they think?
No,
about
well, we understand. Well, the people let Leo do whatever he wants. Because he's our hero and champion of the world, so the people say if Leo wants to live in India, China, or whatever, is the same for us. He deserves it. No problem with that. I understand his situation because I've been in Miami many times, and I understand the quality of life there without pressure, because MLS has a different level of pressure
right.
respect to the La Liga or the Premier League in England or the Argentinian, the local Liga. We understand that the quality of life, I think also the possibility to live in a place very similar to Buenos Aires or Rosario. Speaking in Spanish also, because a lot of the Florida population speak Spanish. You don't need to know English to live in Florida, especially in Miami or North Miami.
Right.
So, I understand the Leo's sons know English because they went to bilingual Spanish and English school, private school,
right.
in Barcelona and also in Paris, because he stayed 2 years there in Paris Saint-Germain.
Paris Saint-Germain,
and
right.
So yeah, and there are many reasons, but I remember when Leo took the option to go to the MLS. In that moment, Rosario was in the middle of narco mafia gate, for example. Those days were very difficult for the city. A lot of people died in bands shoot attacks, or you know, was terrible, and of course and Antonella's family, Antonella is Messi's wife, Antonella's family had problems with the mafia in Rosario with
she did.
Yes, they suffered an attack, not at night, they had a supermarket there. And the Super Marte was shot by someone, you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of bullets, walls on the front of the supermarket, and one paper with something like "We will kill you" or something like that. So now all the family, Leo's family and Antonella's family, are living in Miami. And obviously, if you have that kind of problems, you can't go to Rosario. It's dangerous, very dangerous. So when Leo and Antonella took the decision of to live in Miami, was that moment. So it's what can I say about that? It's logical. Right. If I have money, I am famous, I want to live my life quietly with my children. Now, Leo's children, two of them at least, are playing in the Miami, Inter Miami level young leagues. They are very happy there. They are now they are part of the of the population, part of the society, the community, yeah, or society, yeah, in North Miami or Fort Lauderdale. So what can you say about that? I want to live there with my children. I want to live there. So it's perfect for them. And the weather, the weather is good. Maybe it's too hot in summer, but the weather is nice. You can go to the beach on February, for example, and the sea is not cold, you know. It's great place to live. And he's still doing the things well on the pitch, I mean, because Inter Miami won the last MLS, so it's perfect for him. I congratulate
him.
Yeah,
no, I think that David Beckham kind of showed a lot of these stars the way. He was, you know, not the first, but he was the first to really embrace it and to invest in it and to show players that you can live here. And
I remember New York City Football Club 10 years ago with three world champions, David Villa from Spain, one French player, the former Arsenal player from France,
Thierry Henry.
No. The manager of the New York City Football Club was Patrick Vieira. And David Villa playing, and Pirlo, Andrea Pirlo from Italy. Three world champions. I went to the baseball because New York City Football Club plays in the Yankee Stadium. 2,000 people. Nobody understands. Nobody. And why in Miami, and when every time Lionel Messi play in every stadium around the America, all the stands are full. Because Leo is different, and the conception of David Beckham was different also. Because the champions in New York City Football Club went to New York to win the last good money. But David Beckham created something different. Put Leo as a part of the project. He's not just a simple player. He has, how can I say, I don't know in English, investments in the area,
real estate.
He has a part of Argentine barbecue restaurant there, and a lot of things. So David has the brilliant idea, to invite Lionel Messi to be part of the community of Inter Miami.
Right.
Not just a player. No, you may have a lot of things here in Fort Lauderdale and North Miami, a lot of investment you may have, you know, or get to have a wonderful future, and you have a place for your children. This is the key of everything. Leo loves his children. So If my children are good with a good school, playing football in the minor leagues with Inter Miami, we have investment in real estates and everything for their future. So this is the right place for the family. That's why Lionel Messi is playing there.
Makes sense. No, it makes sense. And like I said, that's the one thing that David Beckham has
done. On the other side,
nobody else has done before Beckham, really. I mean, I remember the old NASL days when Pelé had come over.
No, it was different. No, but that was different.
They were only coming in as players, and then they would go home, and that would be it.
No, that was different because Pelé went to New York for money. That's it.
That's right.
Not with the idea to live in Manhattan for the rest of his life. That was very different. Leo is there because his future is there. And it's very different also to Cristiano Ronaldo, because I guarantee that Cristiano Ronaldo will not live all the rest of his life in the Middle East. I can guarantee that.
I'll guarantee.
Right. No, he's there just for money. Forget it. It's the truth.
Yeah, which is okay. Look, I have no problem with somebody chasing the money that they need to make and however they do it, but I really like the idea of and we'll see what happens long term for the United States. But I really like the idea of superstars like Messi, like Beckham, investing in the United States and
living in the United States. They are living in the United States. It's about life quality, about future. This is the difference, you know, between Leo Messi and Pelé and Cristiano Ronaldo. And I am not saying it's bad to go to the Middle East to Saudi Arabia win money. No. I'm telling that. I am saying that Lionel Messi put on the table different possibilities. Of course, he had offers from a lot of places in the world, from China, because maybe you remember one of the Barcelona players was playing in Japan or in China. So the possibilities to live in different countries were on Messi's table, but he thought in the future of the family. The problem for Messi said when he was in Paris, the city is nice, it's good, but we were unhappy there because we were not part of the community and we suffer, and my children suffered a lot. So now he's in the right place, and this is what I like of America, the opportunity to work, to have a all, if you work hard, you have all the possibilities. This is incredible.
Yeah, no, and I think it will, like I say, we will know long term if it helps, because the one thing that, you know, we lack in the United States when it comes to soccer is we lack culture. We don't have a soccer culture. There are so many things to do here, and I think that there are the freedoms that we do have allows so many people to do different things. And of course, we have American football, and we have basketball, and we have baseball and hockey, all more popular than soccer, NASCAR, racing, you know, car racing and golf and all of the things that we have here. And it really has not allowed us to create a soccer culture like we have in other countries, but it's slowly changed. I'm 63 this year, and there was a time when you couldn't find soccer on television at all. Sunday afternoon, one program Sunday afternoon recap called Soccer Made in Germany, and it was a recap of one game, and that was all there was, period. You couldn't find it. There was not, you know, in communities across the country, people didn't grow up playing it. There were no youth leagues, really, very few to find.
That's the key.
Now, how we had no professional leagues at all. NASL, but you know, NASL of course went out of business, now we have something of a culture here where parents played and their children now are playing mm-hmm. for the first time,
and not just Latin people, not just Latin people. Now you have a lot of football fans, Americans, specialty in Seattle, in Oregon. You have fans, Americans fans in New York, but also in Nashville, in all the center of the country. Yeah, Columbus, yes, yes, and Cincinnati, right. Chicago. You have a lot because it's a simple game and good for the kids. And I think there is a lot of things to do there because of I'm talking about the football culture, giving lectures, talking to the parents, talking to the kids, what is football really? And I remember my last time in New York, I watched a lot of Champions League, European Champions League matches in every pub, in all the pubs with football, at least one television, but some, a lot of games, right, in different televisions, right. And so we have a lot of things to do there. We have to teach, we have to show. I understand it's very important the work of the youth managers, very important, but not just saying you have to play this way, the other way, you as goalkeeper, you as a center forward. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about to show all the goodness of this game.
Right.
I remember one journalist from the New York Times 10 years ago, something like that, he said, football is the game we play when we are kids and we don't know nothing about the sport. And he's wrong because the simplicity of the game, the equipment and the rules are the key in this situation. And you have to go to the stadiums and watch. And this is very Messi's icon is very important for the American football, because now the American can see a real star playing with the soul, not just for money.
And it's happening slowly. It is. It just takes
I know.
It takes generations. It takes generations of fans. I remember very well 20 years ago taking a course from the great Frans Hoek and Gerard Vandelem, who were with Louis van Gaal when they were at Barcelona. And he said, you know, if America ever decides to get serious about soccer, he says they will be unbeatable and they will never lose another World Cup. But they have to get serious about it.
Yeah,
and he's just
yeah, I agree.
The resources that we have, you know,
but
the size of the population and the resources that are here, and the problem we have is that, you know, the resources are so spread out. The fan base is so spread out between all of the other sports. It's not our main focus and our main culture. And I just thought that was interesting coming from a Dutchman who, you know, who's been in Spain, who's been at Manchester United, you know, been at Barcelona, to hear this from him that he thought, you know, boy, if the U.S. ever really got serious.
I agree, Don, but the way is not through the World Cup. Yes, the World Cup is a wonderful opportunity, yes, but it's a show. The key of this matter is on the children, you know, working with them, working with the parents, showing we have something wonderful to to do together, you know. I love to go with my kid to the football games and watch him play. I love it. For me, it's better than to watch a Premiership, English Premiership game. I'm his fan. Yes, because do you understand what I'm trying to tell?
Of course, I had children that
when you go with your children to the field, you are a fan, a real fan. This is the way America has to take.
Yeah.
If you send your boy or your girl to play soccer alone, no, that's not works. No. You have to go together as a family, and the parents must be the kids' fan, and then they will love the sport.
Yeah, there's a guy, I don't know if you follow him on X, there's a guy named Tom Beyer who's in Japan. He's an American, but he's in Japan. But he has a book and he has a program, but he calls Soccer Begins at Home.
Yeah.
And the whole idea
absolutely
is when you have the family in love with it and you have the family encouraging it and playing with the children, that's where the real player is developed and the real passion for the game. It begins at home.
And let me go one step forward. You have to be, or your children, the children must be fans of their own teams. Then, I don't know, if you live in New York, New York City Football Club, or Red Bull from New Jersey, I don't know. But the first team must be your team. This is the route to have a wonderful I know that you in America you have a wonderful future, but it's very, very important that have this in mind. So the root of this sport, and I can tell you because I am from Argentina, and this is the how I explain why in Brazil, Uruguay and Argentina we love soccer. We have soccer like a religion, because when you go to the church, you go with your wife and your children. This is religion. If you go to the soccer with your wife and your children, it's also a religion. So this is what we have to say there. And I guarantee in 10 or 15 years you will win a World Cup with the men squad, not just with the women squad.
Right.
But no, you have to do it. You have to do it.
Yeah.
This is not about go to the stadium, drink beer, and say, oh, wonderful, Lionel. No. It's that you said, soccer love start at home.
Yeah. No. That's what it is, and we're getting there. It just, like I say, it takes time. So what made you decide to write a book on Messi? I want to hear more about your book.
Why? Well, I'm a professional writer on soccer, so I had the need to do it, because like Argentinian, I thought there are two biographies about on Lionel Messi. One by a Catalan journalist, and the other one by an Italian journalist. Why not an Argentinian? And
sure.
To be different to them, I put, you know, the book. I prepared the book with a short test, because we know young people. Doesn't, you know, the young people don't read too much, and I try to prepare something different with a lot of anecdotes, funny stories, statistics and quotes, and something to do the test more relaxed, you know. This is not Crime and Punishing by Dostoevsky. This is soccer. So we have to be simple. Yeah. Or War and Peace from Leon Tolstoy, no?
Was there anything that surprised you? So as you were doing the research for this book, was there anything that surprised you that you didn't know going in that you really like, wow, I didn't know that. That really surprises me.
But it was a simple work. Let me tell you, it's the truth. Now you have a lot of interviews. You have, for example, all the collection of El Mundo Deportivo, the sport newspaper from Barcelona. So you can read the newspaper like today, like today's newspaper on your computer. So it's not hard to obtain information about Lionel Messi. And there are thousands of interviews on Lionel and partners or colleagues, and but not many books. So this is what I try to do, to synthesize his life, his wonderful life, full of games and glory and everything. But for me, it's important to show a human Lionel Messi. He had problems with his health, so he had to take a treatment to grow up. He had problems in many clubs here in Argentina, so he went to Barcelona for a different future. I try to tell that Lionel Messi is a hero, a sport hero, but also a human being. And as any human being like you and me, we have problems, we have happiness, we have family situations, and well, this is all here.
Right. So what were some of the problems that he was having in Argentina? Why couldn't he settle in with the professional clubs there?
Well, the problem was when Lionel Messi had 13 and 14 years old, he had to initiate a treatment to grow up, to be taller. He was very, very small. And in that moment, Argentina collapsed, the economy of Argentina collapsed, and the social security of Lionel Messi's father went down, so they can't pay for the treatment. So Lionel's father went to Newell's Old Boys, the club in which Leo was playing at that moment, and said, we need to continue the treatment, if not he will not grow up. No, impossible, we don't have any money. And the directory was full of millionaires, and they had to pay, I don't know, $10,000, $15,000, nothing for the pocket of that people. And no money. This is another problem in Argentina. The people who work in clubs first go for money and then for the club, but never put money from their pocket. So Lionel's father went to River Plate in Buenos Aires and say, hey, we need a treatment. Leo went to Buenos Aires and played once with his in a game with people of his age, and the manager said, well, yes, we want him. He's too small, but we want him. And when Leo's father talked to the board, they say, okay, no problem, we pay for him. But Newell's Old Boys say no to let him go for free from Newell's Old Boys to Buenos Aires, to River Plate in Buenos Aires. So the opportunity became from Barcelona. You may come with your son. We have a work for you, for Messi's father. Lionel was 13 or 14 years old, so he was too young, so we can come with him. We have an apartment for you, for your family. We have a job, and we pay for the treatment. No problem at all. That's it. Very simple.
How did that original connection in Barcelona happen?
Well, one guy from Rosario was working in Barcelona. I don't remember the name. I have the name here. Sorry, I don't remember now. And he said to the Barcelona's board, I know a little guy, very talented, in Rosario. He's the phrase was, he's the new Maradona. And Maradona was a Barcelona player. His first team in Europe was Barcelona. So they sent one guy who discovered Diego in Buenos Aires and put Diego in Barcelona. The guy who put Diego in Barcelona went to Buenos Aires to watch Leo play and say, yes, of course, he's a new Maradona, of course. And you have the tickets, plane tickets to come. Simple. And the first contract was written on a napkin. On a napkin like this one. Yes. Now you can train with your new partners, your new colleagues, and forget it. You have everything. You have the treatment, the health treatment, you have the apartment, you have everything. And it was very simple. Leo, with all the situation under control, Leo became the number one.
Yeah, well, he sure did, and he definitely captured the imagination of the world.
Sorry, because I told the story short. Read my book, as Gordon Gekko said in Wall Street 2. Read my book.
we will. And so the book is the Lionel Messi story.
Yeah,
is the book. And where can people pick up that book at?
Sorry. What?
Where can people pick up copies of the book? At Amazon or?
Yes, Amazon and Barnes and Noble, Yes, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's very simple. The Lionel Messi story, or by my name, Luciano Bernicke. So it's simple. But the book is physically, you know, you may go to Barnes & Noble store and you will find the book there. No problem.
Well, I'm sure our audience will listen. And I want to thank you for coming onto the podcast.
No, thank you. Thank you, Don. Excuse my English. Excuse my English is not good enough to be a reporter in America.
No, perfect. You're fine. And I have a feeling.
And I hope. Football I hope long. One time we can make a lecture together. To let the people understand the importance of soccer.
this has been great. And when you release your new book, please come back on and we'll talk about your new book too.
Thank you very much. Yes, my new book is The History of Football in 500 Games or Matches. Will be in America on June.
Well, when it gets released, why don't you come back on and we'll...
Of course. I will talk to the people from Penguin Random House. It's my publisher.
Thank you. Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you, Dom.
Thank you so much for coming on.